It's time for Gerby's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gerby. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gerby & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gerby and Carrie Kasem.
A good afternoon, Los Angeles. And welcome to Gerby's Law, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I am Alan Gerby, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gerby & Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And Gerby's Law is all about turning negatives into positives, and today we have a special show which is the ultimate in turning a negative into positive. But I looked outside Carrie Kasem, my co-host, and saw gray skies, and all I could think of was, gray skies are going to clear up.
Put on a happy face.
Brush off the clouds and cheer up.
Put on a happy face.
And spread sunshine all over the place. Just put on a happy face.
I think we just lost a lot of listeners.
Yeah, that's it. This is a legal show, not an entertainment show.
Thank you very much.
So, Carrie Kasem and I have both been traveling this week. I just returned from Maui yesterday. I was at a conference, and the conference was on the Subsequent Injury Fund. You go to Maui to learn about injuries, and I was feeling no pain there. But I got to tell you, if anyone has been injured, and it's not just workers' compensation, but it's subsequent, the work injury is subsequent to a pre-existing injury. If you're totally disabled, call me up, and I'll discuss a little bit about what we talked about in Hawaii. My number again is 855-4RGW-LAW. That's 855-4RGW-LAW. And I have a story to tell you about my return from Maui. But before I do, we have much more important stuff to cover, and that's with Carrie Kasem, who I need to start with a big congratulations to you for this week. And Carrie, tell all our listeners what you were doing this week.
Well, it started off Tuesday. I flew to Austin, Texas to testify in front of the House of Representatives about the visitation bill that I'm lobbying all over the country. And it looks like it might just pass. It got out of committee, which was unanimous, the committee it was in. Flew to Florida to speak about elder abuse at a conference called Kids Need Both. Then from there, I flew to Iowa to sign my bill into law with Governor Branstad and Senator Zahn and Simon Conway, who championed the bill. And we got the visitation law in Iowa.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
And there's more to come.
There is.
You were going from state to state.
I was.
Getting visitation bills out there, and it's really important. Now we need to get our California brethren to follow suit.
Yes, we do. And Assemblyman Mike Gatto is really, you know, doing his best to get it through. We almost had it through last year. There's a good chance it's going to get here this year.
Well,
good chance.
We have our fingers crossed.
Thank you.
To say congratulations to you. You look fantastic. You've been running around, and you look great.
Thank you.
You need to take this weekend, take a break. So what happened to us? We had a great time. Hudson Harper and Nancy and I had a great time in Maui.
Well, so you look good, too. I like the tan because you're a little, I see a little sun, and you got that haircut.
I did.
Looks good.
It's my Hawaiian haircut. But I got to tell you, when we were coming off the plane on our way back, I had the weirdest experience. I've never had this before, and I hate to say it, but what happened on the plane was really quick. I'm not going to mention the airlines, but two people in front of us who obviously were feeling a little bit of pain after leaving early in the morning from Maui started yelling at my little son, Hudson, who's 2 years old. He was watching the iPad, and they thought he was kicking the chair, which he wasn't. Harper, the one-year-old, had moved the tray that the iPad was sitting on, And I guess they got upset, and they said she's got a headache. The lady in front got a headache, whatever. We held Hudson. We didn't say anything. We just sat there. The guy called the flight attendant. The flight attendant came. I took Hudson away. We went to the back of the airplane. Apparently, there was an exchange between the people in front of us. My wife had said something to the flight attendant about that, you know, maybe they're hungover or something. Our kids are just, they're 1 and 2 years old. Anyway, the flight attendant came to the back of the plane. I was talking to another flight attendant, telling her what was going on. And she came and she put her hand on me and said, "I don't want you going back there." And she just kind of pushed me. And I said, "You know, we weren't doing anything. He's 2 years old." Anyway, she said, "I'm done." She had like a nervous breakdown. She called the captain, the pilot, and was talking about having the plane land in the middle of the water. And I'm going, this is ridiculous. Anyway, we went back to our seats. I sat down. There was nothing that happened after that. I held Hudson. He fell asleep. Harper fell asleep. We got off the plane. We were waiting for the stroller. And this little mini man who looked exactly like Louis De Palma from Taxi, which was Danny DeVito, came into my face and said, "Don't you ever start trouble again on my plane." And I said, "Your plane? Who are you?" And he takes out a badge. He says, "I'm the captain." And I said, "What?" He says, "I flew the plane." I was like, "Seriously, you're getting in my face? We're waiting for our stroller. Their kids are trying to sleep. I'm holding both kids." And he starts getting to my face, and he was holding his name tag, and he was shaking, and I said, "Stop shaking." By the way, for you lawyers out there, that's a trial technique that I use. When someone is in your face in trial or when you're outside of the courtroom, I always do it. When they start yelling at me, I say, "You've got a little schmutz on your face." You know what schmutz is?
Yes, of course.
And, you know, right away, they lose their focus, and they start wiping their
face. Right, right. So you told him he was trembling.
He was trembling, and then he said, "Oh, okay," and he stopped trembling. Anyway, he said, "You're never going to fly on this airline again. I'm going to make sure of it."
He called
the police. The police came, and everyone is off the plane. He's screaming his head off. He must have been sleeping with the flight attendant or something because he was going crazy about this flight attendant who'd called him, said that we had caused a disturbance. We sat there. Two really nice police officers came and a representative of the airline. And the guy said, as he was leaving, he said, "You'll never fly this airline again." Then walked away and said, "Thanks for flying, blank airlines." And I was like, and the police saw that, and they said, "I don't know what's wrong with this guy." Anyway, we sat with the police, we told the story, and they said, "This is ridiculous. You need to report this pilot to the airline." And then the representative of the airlines was there and saying, "He can't tell you that you're never going to fly on this large airline." And they said, "Please write this guy up and use the flight information." It was totally, totally bizarre. But what we took from it is, these are people who are flying our planes? Yikes!
Wow. I mean, did he even listen to your side of the story?
No, he called me a liar because I said she pushed me and the other flight attendant saw her push me. The police talked to the other flight attendant. The other flight attendant admitted that she did put her hand on me and push me, and I said, "Don't push me." And the flight attendant actually said, "Yes, that's what she did." So when I said that she put her hand on me, the captain said, "You're a liar." And I said, "You weren't even there. I mean, let's talk about evidence, bud."
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
You should tweet about it, write about it, you'll get free tickets.
I don't know what to do.
That is really crazy,
crazy
Alan.
Story. There was and I'm not going to tell you what airline it is.
No, but next time you should pull out your recorder and start recording.
We did. I took out a video.
Okay. Okay,
unfortunately,
good.
My wife was shaking and she didn't do the video very well.
You should have said, "You're trembling."
It would have distracted her. Anyway, we have a great show today. You guys, no one wants to miss this show because we are so fortunate to have with us two incredible attorneys. Both, they worked at the same firm, the founding members of Burris, Schoenberg, and Walden. And we have Don Burris, and we have none other than Randy Schoenberg on our show. And for those of you who have not seen the Weinstein Company movie, Woman in Gold, you have to see it. I saw it last night at 10:30 last night. I loved it. It was really, really interesting. And we are going to talk to these incredible attorneys who have been fighting for years to bring back artwork that is rightfully to their owners in the United States that were looted by Nazis during and before World War II. So you have got to listen to what these guys have to say. Go see the movie Woman in Gold. Randy Schoenberg is played by Ryan Reynolds. There's a strong resemblance between those two, so you don't want to miss it. You are listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We will be right back.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
The first step to a beautiful lawn this spring is an application of Revive. Hi, Dale Langford here. You know, I've been writing lawn and garden columns for over 40 years. And I found one product that really works. It's Revive Organic Soil Treatment. Revive is a proven, unique formula of wetting agents, soil conditioners, and nutrients. It's organic-based, safe for kids and pets, and will not burn your lawn. Revive moves fertilizer and water down deep to the roots. Hey, that saves water and fertilizer, and that saves money. The results are spectacular. Get greener grass with less water. A lush, dark green, healthy lawn that you can be proud of. And remember, saving water is saving money. Revive is available at your favorite garden center. Visit Revive.com for more information and store locations. Use Revive every few weeks for the greenest lawn on your block. In fact, use Revive right now. It works.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Very cool intro music. I think I'm just going to listen to this for the rest of the afternoon. You know, unfortunately in Nepal there was that horrible earthquake. And, you know, for anyone who can help out the people of Nepal, please make sure you send whatever you can to help them out because a lot of them have nothing. I spent a lot of time in Nepal. In fact, in 2010, I got stuck in a Maoist revolution, a strike, and I wasn't permitted to leave the country.
I remember that strike.
Yeah, it was really kind of a scary little adventure that I had. I ended up going to the Chitwan jungle and hiding out with the monkeys and the elephants until the strike was over. And I had no communication, so no one was really happy about me being in Nepal at the time. But I did meet a lot of great folks who protected me during the Maoist strike. And my heart goes out to those folks who are suffering today.
And is there, you know, I know that the Red Cross always sets up stuff, but you can always go online and just look up, you know, where to give and make sure you know that where your money is going to, because you, sometimes you have to specify exactly where you want your money to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to change the subject because we are here to turn negatives into positives. This is not Murphy's Law. This is Gervie's Law. Murphy's Law said that everything that can go wrong will go wrong. In Gervie's Law, everything that can go wrong can also go right. And we have two incredible, incredible attorneys in, right here in studio who have done something that not a lot of us attorneys can say that we did, doing something so right, bringing back art to folks who lost their art during, and families, of course, during the Holocaust, that was looted by the Nazis. They have spent so much time trying to get that art back in the rightful owner's hands of the families, and it is so complicated. We are so happy to have with us, we have Randy Schoenberg, who is part of the movie Woman in Gold. If you haven't seen it, you need to go out and see that. And, of course, the founding partner of the firm, Burris, Schoenberg & Walden, Don Burris. Welcome, guys, to Gervie's Law.
Thank you very much.
So I want to start here with Randy. First of all, as a young lawyer, and you're still a young guy, but about 20 years ago, what gave you the impetus to start looking into this very, very esoteric part of the law?
Well, 1998, I was working downtown at a big law firm, and I got a call from my grandmother's best friend. I was just short of my 32nd birthday. And she said, Randy, I'd like to meet with you and tell you about my family story and what happened to these paintings that were owned by my uncle. And that's how it started.
She wasn't trying to fix you up, a little shit up or anything?
No, I was already married, sort of newly married. We had our first child had just been born. We moved into our first home. And a few months later, she gave me the call.
Now, you were with a big firm at the time. Did they have a problem letting you investigate this type of, you know, strange request from this woman?
My bosses, the partners, were pretty nice and let me first work with Maria and try to recover the paintings using, there was a committee set up in Austria, and so first that committee had to make a decision. But once the committee decided not to return the paintings, then the firm was really not interested in pursuing it anymore. And so I had to look at other avenues.
Right, and in the film, it shows one of the partners saying to you, you know, you need to make money here, and this isn't going to make money. Now, flip ahead 15 years, and they're like, damn it, why did we let Randy go? Because we all know that this became a very lucrative venture. How did you two guys, Don, tell us how you met up with Randy before, you know, the whole Maria Altman story came out?
Randy and I were old friends, and I was friendly with his dad, who was a notable judge on the West Side in Los Angeles. And this is a true story, I walked into my elevator in my building, and Randy opened the door as I was getting in. I said, Randy, what are you doing here? He said, well, you know, I left the big firm, and I formed a small firm on my own. And I said, how are you doing? He said, well, it's a struggle. He said, I'm trying to get some cases going for some relatives, some really worthwhile cases. But it's a struggle. I said, Randy, I don't care what you're paying. Come downstairs. Join me. You'll never have to pay rent. At the time, I needed a lot of help. And when we had our first conversation, he said, would I mind? He has a couple of Holocaust-oriented cases. Who knew where they would go? We were considered to be Don Quixotes.
Right.
And at the time, and I said, of course. I mean, I'm Jewish, and I felt for Randy. I felt for the families. And I said, of course. And in my case, not looking at the money, but in the end, of course, being very happy about it. And Randy is really the best lawyer I've ever worked with and a very good friend and very proud to have worked on these cases.
Now, how did you get approached about a movie? And I know Ryan Reynolds plays you, Randy. That's awesome. What an incredible thing. How did you get approached on this?
Well, while the case was going on, there were, I think, four or five documentaries that were being made because we went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, so there was a lot of notoriety. No one knew how it exactly would end, and once it was over, many people came up to me and said, oh, it wouldn't be great to do a movie. I mean, here I am in Los Angeles, and it was the painting involved was the most expensive painting in the world for a while, and so it had Nazis and Supreme Court case and expensive painting. What could go wrong, right? And so a lot of people wanted to do a movie, but nothing really came of it, and finally, a few years later, then the director, Simon Curtis, saw one of these documentaries in England and contacted the BBC Films and said, you know, I'd like to do this movie. Are you interested? They were interested, and they came to me and Maria, who was still alive then, and they bought our life rights. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And it's really
right.
Sort of a nominal payment for an option to make the movie about you. And I thought that was going to be pretty good because I've been told that BBC Films actually does make a lot of movies. They don't just buy the stories and then table them. And so I said yes, and here we are 6 years later with a movie in 2,000 theaters across the nation.
And it's called Woman in Gold.
Woman in Gold.
With Helen Mirren and Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan and Katie Holmes, of course.
Katie Holmes plays my wife.
Yes, sure.
There you go.
My wife's actually a little cuter than Katie.
Oh, very good.
Very well said.
Yes.
Very well
said. Your wife will be very proud of you for that. Now, let's go back, because a lot of people must be confused. You're talking about a Supreme Court decision. It's the Republic of Austria versus Altman, 2004. Now, people are wondering, why was the Supreme Court hearing a case that was really about something, a property in Austria?
So I had this crazy idea, why couldn't Maria Altman, who had escaped the Nazis and come to Los Angeles in the 40s, why couldn't she sue here in the United States, her home country? And so I looked in the law books, and there's this rule that says you can't sue a foreign state. It's called foreign sovereign immunity. But there's some exceptions, and one of the exceptions has to do with property taken in violation of international law, where the property is owned by an agency of a foreign state that's engaged in business here in the United States. So I found a connection between the museum and the United States. They sold books, guidebooks in bookstores, and I thought, wow, you know, the paintings were taken by the Nazis. That's got to be in violation of international law. Maybe she can sue here. And so when I left and went out on my own, one of the first things I did was I filed a complaint in Los Angeles in federal court for Maria Altman against Austria, the Republic of Austria, seeking the return of her family's paintings.
Yeah, in the movie, it shows that you're kind of dejected. Things aren't really going that well. You go into a bookstore, and you come across a book with the picture of the woman in gold on the cover. Did that really happen?
Yeah, that really happened. I think it was in Century City the old Brentano's there.
The Brentano's bookstore.
And came across this book, and it had the gold portrait on the cover, and I flipped it over, and it said, you know, published by the Austrian Gallery. And I thought, ooh, that's a good thing.
Here's my hook.
That's a good thing. So that issue then went all the way up to the Supreme Court. We had very good judges in the district court and the Ninth Circuit. But the U.S. government, after we won in the Ninth Circuit, decided that this was not a good precedent, because all the other countries in the world, like Japan and France and Mexico, calling and saying, oh, my God, what's going on in California? We're all going to get sued.
And actually lawsuits had either been commenced or threatened against institutions such as the French railroads for transporting people to the concentration camps, against the Japanese for having impressed women into slavery from Korea and from China and the like. And these consuls were there when Randy and I were at the Supreme Court, sitting there really worried about the outcome of this case.
So, but they got our State Department, the U.S. State Department, it was the Bush administration then, to actually oppose us. So when we were arguing in the Supreme Court, when they took the case, it was against both Austria and the U.S. government.
Right, and that's depicted in the movie. And the point there is that if we're going to look at this as a reciprocal arrangement, those who feel they may have been harmed by the United States in wartime or other sort of conflict time may have started these kind of proceedings in their own country to go against American citizens. I mean, it's a whole Pandora's box.
Right, but you have to, Alan, just look at one footnote in that context. Almost everything the Nazi authorities did in any of the occupied countries is considered invalid ab initio. In other words, it's not a regular structure. However, the United States would obviously be considered a legitimate country. For example, some of the communist countries are considered legitimate even if they take confiscatory activities. So you have to deal with that as well. The disadvantage to dealing with the Nazis is obvious, but the advantage is that they are considered pariahs to begin with.
So what actually happens is you are victorious, and it's interesting because both...
Spoiler alert, by the way. Yeah.
The spoiler alert. We have our 2:30 alert coming up, too, but... Before we get to the news,
more spoilers.
In watching the Supreme Court scene in the movie, you have Chief Justice Rehnquist, who looked like he was on your side, although I've read some reports from other people that thought that the Supreme Court was not on your side during oral argument.
Well, it was for the people who were there. Don was next to me. The oral argument did go very well, and it's very true to life the way it's portrayed there, except... The person who asked the question that sort of stalls me in the beginning was Justice Souter. They made it into Justice Rehnquist.
And Souter is known for inscrutable questioning.
Yeah. So they combined all the justices' questions into one person. They made it Justice Rehnquist with Jonathan Pryce playing him.
We're also going to find out how true to your story the movie is, but we need to take a quick break for the news. You're listening to Gervie's Law. I'm with Don Burris and Randy Schoenberg right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
When you need to find a part at a price that's right, that red and blue sign is just within sight. Roll in,
roll in
to CarQuest and roll on.
Domestic, European, or Asian, CarQuest has the right parts to keep you safely on the road. With over 800,000 products available, you're sure to find exactly what you need when you visit CarQuest Auto Parts. Great people, great products, great prices.
Imagine a store that lets you get the things you wanted, how you wanted. Don't want to use your credit? Don't. Don't have credit? Don't worry. Want to set up a payment plan around your paydates so you're never short on cash? It's up to you. Imagine payments that fit your budget, your schedule, your life. That's Rent-A-Center. Imagine that. No credit needed. Flexible payment plan scheduled around your needs. Imagine new possibilities at Rent-A-Center. Rental purchase transaction. See store for details.
What's the secret to financial independence? You need a steady passive income, something more than just wages from a job. At Compound Stock Earnings, we teach you how to earn 3 to 6% cash return per month from your investments. We're so confident in your success that we offer a money-back guarantee on our Fast Start seminar. Want to learn more? Tune in to Unconventional Wisdom, the CSE Investment Show, this Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC or visit CompoundStockEarnings.com.
iHeartRadio plays your favorite station and over 1,500 more live local stations through your mobile device. So when you leave town, you can still hear the sounds and programming you love and discover more like music, sports, news. There's lots there, and iHeartRadio is always free. Just download the app for Android, iPhone, iPad, Windows Phone, and more. Find out what over 20 million registered users already know at iHeartRadio.com.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
That's right. Call us right here at KABC. It's 800-222-5222, 800-222-KABC. I am Alan Gervie, and I'm here with Carrie Kasem. And we are so fortunate to have with us two incredible attorneys, Don Burris and Randy Schoenberg. These are attorneys who have been instrumental in having artwork that were looted by the Nazis returned to their rightful owners and the families who owned the artwork before the Nazis took over. And there are some really incredible scenes in the movie Woman in Gold that show how the Jews were taken advantage of and all of their property was stolen. We were just talking about the Supreme Court, the decision from 2004 in Maria Altman's case. And one of the things that I had to ask you, Randy, because this is something my wife wanted to know, was in the movie it shows you going to the Supreme Court while your wife is about to give birth. I think it was at Nathan, your son?
It was actually Joey. They combined our two boys into one. So they called him Nathan in the movie, but it's really Joey's birth from my perspective.
So tell us what happened. Just because I had some problem on my second child's birth, I pretended like my wife didn't need to go to the hospital at the time, and Carrie was upset with me because I said, you know, she said, whenever a wife, well, your wife says she's going to hospital, you go.
But
apparently you went to Washington instead.
So the truth is, you know, Hollywood changes things a little bit. So my wife's water really didn't break while I was packing to go to the Supreme Court, but she didn't come with me because she was 27 weeks pregnant with Joey, and she called me about 36 hours before the argument on the Monday evening and said, you know, don't be too excited, but I'm in the hospital with preterm labor. She had actually gone into labor, very prematurely at 27 weeks while I was in Washington preparing to argue for the first time in the Supreme Court. So we always told that as part of the story, and, you know, Hollywood, they had to make it a little bit more dramatic. But it's so much of the movie is like that, where you see something and say, oh, it couldn't possibly have happened like that, but it's all really based on things that happened.
So truth is stranger than fiction.
That's
it really is. Like, there's some things that happened to me during this whole year and a half of mine that nobody would believe was real. Like, you know, you'd think, oh, that's definitely embellished for, you know, television, TV, or the story, and it's not.
Yeah. Well, when the hamburger meat was thrown at you, we saw that on video, so we know that that was real.
Yes, you did.
What other instances were there in the movie that that creative license was taken that maybe made you pause?
I mean, if I can answer two parts, there's one sort of pivotal scene where you might think it's made up, where I sort of break down and cry at this monument. That's also based on a true story. I wasn't there with Maria, but I was in Vienna, and I was there at the unveiling of that monument, and there was a big ceremony going on, and I started thinking about my great-grandfather who was murdered in Treblinka, and my grandparents, and just you get that wave of emotion thinking about personal things like that, even if it didn't happen to you. It's really an interesting thing that our mind does. But I had that wave of emotion and started crying, and they used that as a pivot point.
Yeah.
There's one scene that I don't want to ruin for everybody, but there's a scene where Maria says goodbye to her parents, and that's fictionalized because Maria's father actually died a few weeks before she left, in the summer of 1938 after the Nazis came in. And I always looked at that as fiction and really, you know, didn't really move me quite as much. I mean, I was very moved by that scene in the film, but didn't have any sort of personal response to it. And then someone came up to me and said, oh, that scene, I was just devastated because my mother also left her parents and said goodbye to them and never saw them again. And only then did I realize, you know, my grandfather did the same thing. My grandfather had fled from Vienna and never saw his parents again. And it's amazing how I had watched the film about it 10 times and had never made that connection until someone said it. And it shows you sort of the power of film when they do fictionalize or universalize things. It really can touch people in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And so that's a scene that really did play out.
Right.
Many,
I
want to
know.
Lives.
I want to know if they fictionalized Maria Altman at all, or was she as much of a dynamo and sassy as she's played by Helen Mirren, beautifully, by the way, in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, both Helen Mirren and Maria are these sort of elegant, super charming, sort of very gorgeous, sexy, funny people, right? Tough. So they both have those characteristics. So it's not really fictionalized. I think she does a really good job of embodying Maria. I mean, there's certain things that are different, obviously, that Helen Mirren does a good job with the accent, but it's, you know, the voice of Maria in my head is obviously a little different. But I think the way she deals with the past is similar with Maria. Maria had sort of a take-it-or-leave-it attitude towards Austria. She had left just shortly after she got married. She was 22 years old when she escaped, and she didn't look back so much, unlike my grandmother, who was a little bit older and was 30 already, and so that was really a big part of her. Maria said, "The only thing I still have is the accent." That's how she felt.
Yeah.
And Helen Mirren really, really did that very, very well.
You know, Don, you had a chance to meet Maria?
I did. I was going to say, as a sort of footnote to what Randy said, I was very pleased and honored to get to know her, obviously not as long as Randy had. And she was just a warm, incredible, wonderful woman who never lost sight of the goal. And I can tell you this, in all my years of practice, I've had a lot of successes, hopefully. In all my years of life, I've had a lot of good things happen to me. Nothing compares to the idea of Randy and I communicating to Maria that she won the case in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And, of course, that's not where it ended. So people who are listening now who haven't seen the movie, they want to know how the paintings were actually brought back to the United States, because that was the big decision in the movie, and I'm assuming in real life, Randy, where you decided to go to arbitration in Austria rather than going through with the whole process here in the United States. Can you tell us a little bit about that decision?
And if you just tuned in, we are talking about The Woman in Gold. It's a movie. Ryan Reynolds is in it. Helen Mirren is in it. So if you are listening to everybody and they're fascinated by the stories, go see it.
And Randy Schoenberger, of course, is played by Ryan Reynolds in the movie, and we have Ryan Reynolds look-alike right here, Randy Schoenberger.
And I'm there in spirit.
And Don Berth is in the background. There's a little difference.
He's the woman in gold. Isn't that who he plays? No?
He's got silver hair and a lot of great silver hair.
Thank you.
Okay, so the decision to do arbitration was something that I had hoped and asked the Austrians to do in 1999 when they first decided not to return the paintings, because there was a legal issue about Maria's aunt's will, and I thought that should be really decided, you know, legally
right.
in some fashion. But they refused to do that, so we sued here in the United States, and then we got permission to go ahead with the suit. And then the Austrians came to us and said, well, what about arbitration? And I was very excited. I thought, wow, that's really a great idea. And I went and talked with Maria in a separate room, and I said, oh, isn't this great? We can have this arbitration. And she said, are you crazy? Why would I want my case decided by Austrians when the district court loves us, the Ninth Circuit loves us, the Supreme Court? And I said, Maria, if you want this decided in your lifetime, we have to take this chance, because she was already 89 years old. The case had been going on for 6-7 years. And I said, you know, it could go on another 5-7 years. And even if we had won in the United States, Austria could have refused to accept the judgment. So she stuck with me, and we went back to Austria and did the arbitration.
I got to say, Donna and I, both lawyers, that had to take more guts than any other decision a lawyer has made.
Alan,
because what I fear in my case is home court advantage by the other team.
Also, bear in mind, and it's hard to tell you the whole picture here, but so many of our friends and supporters were very critical of this decision. They said, you guys have done something for the world. You've done something for the Jewish people. Fight it here. You've got the courts on your side. You know, we got blasting phone calls and the like. But Randy and I were of the same view. It is really a client's decision. This is an older woman ready to go. And bear in mind one other thing, as lawyers and as lay people. There was never a settlement offer of any kind. I mean, how many cases have you handled? There's never been a settlement offer for many, many years here. So
you have no choice.
Right.
Yeah. For me, I looked at it. I'm not a great chess player, but it's sort of like a chess game. When I play chess, I try not to lose. That's how I play.
Yeah.
You move and try not to lose. And that's how I was doing the case until, if you get luckily into a position where there's an end game where you can actually win, right? I do this move, that move, and that move, and I win. Then it's the end game. I looked at the arbitration like the end game. All I had to do was prove X, Y, and Z, and it was
and
over.
It was over.
There was no evidentiary issues, no other procedural issues. Yeah.
But that's a big if.
Yeah.
And what gave you the idea that it may go your way? Now, in the movie, you have the guy, the investigative reporter, working with you. Is that truthful? And was he in your ear saying, give it a shot here?
Hubertus Chernin is very much real. He was really the person who uncovered all of the looted art in Austria and wrote an expose on it, which caused them to pass a law which we ultimately used to recover the painting. So he is really a key character. Tragically, he died at age 50 just after we got the paintings back.
Did he know, though? He knew.
He was here in Los Angeles when the paintings were here, so in a wheelchair, but he died a few weeks later of mastocytosis. Terrible. But no, he was also against me going into the arbitration in Austria. He had no faith in the Austrian arbitrators. I thought we could win because I thought we were right on the legal issue, and I was very naive throughout this whole thing. I just thought, you know, if you're right, you should win. And here was a way of actually winning while Maria was alive, and that's how I felt.
I joined him, Alan.
But you weren't a young, inexperienced attorney who thought that you could put all of your eggs in the legal issue basket.
No, but from my perspective, this really made a lot of sense. And I think the fact that I had the many years of experience and the gray hair that you lovingly just referred to really put me in a position where I think Randy respected, you know, it was his decision, and it was a bright one. He did a great job in the Supreme Court. But I could give them a little perspective from the many cases I had. I work with the Watergate Committee. That's a whole other story beforehand. So I think I had a little bit of perspective on alternative remedies.
Yeah.
And also on the fact that in the end, if your client is a knowing, intelligent, knowledgeable, sensitive person, you follow what your client wants you to do.
You know, we have to take a quick break, but before we do, I have one really important question that you know, a legal question here. So just real quickly, she had there was a will. Adele had a will saying that it would go to the Belvedere or whatever it was at the time.
She wanted her husband to donate the paintings to the museum. Yes.
To the museum. Now, how was it that, you know, she predeceased her husband, so how was it that her husband actually would have had the rights to keep it versus following through with his wife's wishes?
Well, I'm not an expert on wills, but there's a term called precatory language. So in a will, you can make requests which are not binding. And the interesting thing is that when Maria's aunt, Adele, died, she's the one in the picture, and she said, please donate my two portraits and the four landscapes to the museum after your death. There was a document filed by Maria's father, who was the family lawyer, Maria Altman's father, Gustav, filed this document in 1926 that says these requests are not binding on her husband, Ferdinand, and it should be noted that Ferdinand was the owner of the paintings and not Adela. So she was asking her husband to do something with his property, just a request.
Right. That's very interesting.
And the Austrians did all they could to hide all of this.
To hide all that, and that's what you uncovered. And we'll talk a little bit about that after the break, about the investigative report. I think, Don, you write in your presentation, you say something, you're more of a, have to be more of an investigative reporter than a lawyer. But just to follow up finally on that point, what did her Frederick, what did his will say? Because he passed
Ferdinand.
Away. Ferdinand.
So Ferdinand died in 1945 after the paintings had been taken from him. He was in exile in Switzerland living alone, and he wrote a will that just said, I give my estate to my two nieces and nephew.
So that's what you hang your hat on.
Very straightforward.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's very interesting. We got one more segment. This is great. It's Gervie's Law. I'm Carrie Kaysen. She's Alan Gervie. We'll be right back.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law. Alan Gervie, I'm Carrie Kasem.
No.
I am. Yeah, you told me I was Alan Gervie, but I looked in the mirror and my hair wasn't short and I didn't have blue eyes.
And that's why I wasn't talking. I was waiting for you to be Alan Gervie. So now we have our role.
You just like the music.
No, I wanted you to be Alan Gervie. So we're here talking with Randy Schoenberg and Don Burris, and we are talking about the Woman in Gold movie, which, if you haven't seen it, go see it. It's a Weinstein Company feature film out for a couple weeks now. And there has been some criticism for both of you. I think it was a writer, Kimmelman, in the New York Times or something, that said, isn't this about heirs cashing in? Was this really about returning the property to their rightful owners or trying to make a buck? What do you guys say to that?
Number one, absolutely. Absolutely. This was, I'm not saying this because we're involved in it, but the fact that there may have been a payoff for the family, a legitimate payoff, one, how do you have adequate compensation for victims of the Nazis? How do you do that? We're talking about a stated policy of the Nazis to destroy the culture of the Jewish people, and in a small way, we're giving it back. And so, Randy, I'm sure, would agree with me on this. Maria, the last thing in the world Maria would be thinking about would be motivated by money. And we've seen that criticism before, and it's actually unfair because it's coming in many cases from people who haven't really studied the situation, having met her.
Yeah, I would say it was about recovering Maria's family portraits, right? These were paintings that hung in her uncle and aunt's home that she visited, until she had to flee at age 22 from Austria and was never with them again. It just so happens that the paintings are also extremely valuable, but she would have wanted them back had they been completely unvaluable.
She passed away in 2011, and they were sold. So, it kind of begs the question, if she wanted them in her family, now I believe, the Gustav Klimt painting of her aunt is hanging in New York because Ron, Estee Lauder's son, Ron Lauder, bought it.
Right. Well, she was 90 years old when she recovered the paintings, and she was not the only heir. Her sister and brother, who had died already, had heirs. So there was a group of five heirs, and they had to figure out what to do, which isn't so easy. And, if you think about it, if she had held on to the painting for a couple more years, when she died, there would have been estate taxes, and they would have had to sell the painting then. So they made the decision that they would try to place the paintings as best they could right then, and the family really wanted the gold portrait to stay in public display. And so one of the best things I did was step aside and have the family hire another lawyer, a guy named Steve Thomas at Irell and Manila, who was a terrific transactional attorney that deals with the buying and selling of art. And he negotiated with Ronald Lauder, and Ronald Lauder agreed to buy the painting and give it to the Neue Gallery, his new museum in New York on 86th and 5th in New York.
And that's where it hangs
And put
now.
It on permanent display. I mean, there's an agreement that it will never be moved.
It's a beautiful centerpiece.
That's great.
Yeah. The gallery reminds you of Austria. The coffee shop reminds you of Austria. And the gold painting is right there.
Now, aren't the people of Austria pissed off?
Well, it's interesting. So while we were doing the case, we had some friends, and you can see in Austria, there are people like Hubertus Czernin who really want to do the right thing and do the right thing.
Right.
And that speech at the end that my character says, there are two Austrias, right? That was something that I really experienced and something I had written. When you win, everybody has been on your side from the beginning. That's what you find out, right? Because that's what they say. So everybody gravitates toward the winner. And when we won, then I think a lot of people decided, okay, this was the right result. We actually had three Austrian arbitrators agree with us. And so there was, I think, quite a number of people who were very pleased with the result. There were, of course, many people who were not pleased and didn't want to see the paintings go, and that's, I think, to be expected.
But there was a powerful message in the movie, and we talk about justice being done, and Don, you've alluded to this. These were wrongs that were carried out under the most heinous conditions, and if you were able to prove that these paintings, and there's not only paintings, we're talking about jewelry and other type of valuable goods, were not the Austrians or the Germans, the Nazis, they weren't rightfully theirs. So isn't there a part of moral law that says, hey, these things should go back to the families? They had them before they were taken.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Not only go back to the families, but become a part again of the Jewish cultural life. Because this was Nazi policy. It was no accident that they came in and tried to destroy and did destroy the culture of the Jewish
and
people.
Hitler and some of the other head honchos were showcasing these pieces in their homes, and this week, interestingly enough, we heard the story of a groaning, Oscar Groening, who came out, 93-year-old guy, finally starts talking about some of the atrocities.
It's a very interesting story. The article that I saw in the newspaper made an interesting point. They were, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but they were talking about how this man claimed he never killed anybody. He was an accountant. He was inventorying the goods there. That's
right.
All he did. But he admitted to observing bad things. And he told the story of a Nazi soldier taking a baby, an infant, throwing the baby against the wall and killing him. And the reaction of this defendant was, I felt terrible. I wished he had shot him. And the reporter made the comment, what an inhuman reaction even now.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know.
And this is only coming out. I mean, as you know, through history, we have seen a number of trials, and we've never really heard from an SS guard.
Right.
This was in Auschwitz.
Very important case. Very important case.
And people say, well, what are the ramifications? Well, the ramifications are for the other people of the world to know, the neo-Nazis, the naysayers, because nothing's going to happen to a 93-year-old man.
I think it's
at this point.
You know, it's 70 years after the end of the war, and it's really our duty now, right? Our generation is responsible for passing on this history and telling the story, and it's why the film is so good that it's there, and why these prosecutions are so necessary, because it's a way of retelling this very important historical story. You know, the Holocaust is, without exaggeration, the greatest human catastrophe in the history of mankind.
That's true.
And it's not exaggerating.
Along that line, Don has written a really incredible piece called From Tragedy to Triumph in the Pursuit of Looted Art, Altman, Benningsen, and Their Progeny. And I don't know, how can people get a hold of this to read this, Don? Because it is a very important, well-written piece.
Call me, I'll email it to them.
Okay.
I'm not selling it. I would be more than happy for them to read it. What it is basically based on the lectures that I give around the country on the cases we've had and the cases we currently have. And I was just going to make one small sort of reference here, and that is we're talking about retelling the story. We get so tired of people telling us we've heard enough about the Holocaust. Remember that scene in the movie where the guy comes up to her and says, congratulations, we don't want to hear about that anymore. I make a point, because I get a lot of phone calls from people who have suffered or their families have suffered and the like, and in most instances, we have no legal basis for suing. I make a point of hearing their story out. I think it's my duty as a lawyer, as a Jew, as a person, as a humanitarian. I think it's my duty to do that. So I think we have...
So we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to hear about what these guys are doing now. Carrie,
I just want to say
ahead.
One thing to Don Burris.
Yeah.
You know, he came up to me right before we started the show, and you had worked with my dad on trying to bring together Arab and Jewish talks. And, you know, there was in a room, my dad always said, we need peace in the Middle East, and it's going to start with conversation.
And you
were part of that, so I want to thank you for that. That was something he was very proud of.
I want to thank your father for being one of the finest human beings I ever worked with.
And that's my father's Casey Kasem, and a lot of people say, oh, he was for the Palestinians. No, he was for peace first and foremost.
Yeah,
so that's really important, and thank you for saying that. Speaking of peace and the Holocaust, tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, Randy.
So since the case ended, I've been president of the Los Angeles Museum of the Holocaust, which is in Pan Pacific Park next to the Grove in that Fairfax and Beverly area. We built a new building, and I helped spearhead that. We have a new building that opened just 4 years ago, and we get about 50,000 people, mainly school kids and visitors, coming through, and it's just been a terrific thing for me to take the success that we've had with these Holocaust-related cases and turn it into education, turn it into something that can actually move things forward.
And, of course, you were compensated very well, so your life has changed because of all your hard work. You've donated, about $7 million to the Holocaust Museum?
To the building, yes, that's correct.
Well, congratulations on that.
And
congratulations on having your life changed.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've done my best since Randy went over to this fantastic museum to be a Randy Schoenberg clone. It's not easy to do. But
and Don can be reached. He is still with the, and we call it Burr Schoenberg and Walden.
That's
still.
That's right. Yes.
It's 310-442-5559. That's 310-442-5559. Or you can go to bslaw.net. I'm not going to make a comment on
Everybody
it.
Everybody loves that.
I love that.
Advertising.
I love that.
How hard is it? how hard is it to not remember bslaw.net? You guys, I want to thank you so much. And Ken Koch, and I have to give Ken a shout-out because he produced this show with Erica Wise, and they did a fantastic job. It was Ken's idea. Ken is sitting here. We have no time for your question. Unfortunately, if we had more time, we would have your question of the day. But I do want to thank you sincerely. Carrie, congratulations on your great work this week.
Thank you very much.
For the visitation bill.
Thank you very much.
We're going to be here next week. Guys, thanks so much for coming. A fascinating story.
Poor Ken. I feel bad. I feel real bad.
It was an honor to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. And go see Woman in Gold. It is a fantastic movie. Make sure you see it. You won't regret it. I'm Alan Gervey. I want to thank you for being here with us on Gervey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.